Open Air is a call-in talk show on KZSU Stanford featuring Zen teacher Sherry Huber and hosted by Michael Gray. Every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m., we talk about the challenges and opportunities in life. Call us at 650-723-9010 to experience the freedom that comes from exploring the possibilities available to each of us today. Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
It's great to be here.
Yes, it is.
Yes. Today we have a special pre-recorded show, so please don't call us today. Call us next week. We're going to be back on the air Tuesday, March 30th, and we'd love to hear from you then.
Yes, in fact, we have a little homework assignment. Mm-hmm. Shall we get into that a little bit later, or is now a good time?
Now would be a good time, sure.
Okay. I'm reading a book called Middle Mind, Why Americans Don't Think for Themselves, by a fellow named Curtis White. Mm-hmm. And I'm encouraging everybody who wants to participate in a little book club to read the book. And he's talking about... what is her name? Molly Ivins says he delivers an unflinching and wry look at the dumbing down of the American imagination. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested in seeing how people see what he's talking about from a very kind of center of culture sort of place. Mm-hmm. How that is like our practice, mm-hmm, of getting out of conditioned mind and waking up to possibility.
Uh-huh.
So, The Middle Mind, Why Americans Don't Think for Themselves, by Curtis White.
By Curtis White.
March the 30th. If people are interested, we'll have a little book club.
That would be great. Yes. And as you mentioned in our show last week, he talks about a differentiation between imagination and reality.
Yes. And how reality is fixed for us by academia and politics and entertainment, mm-hmm, and what happens when something arises that isn't in the, mm-hmm, what is defined as the norm.
I see.
What is defined, the norm, of course, being reality.
Yes, whatever that is.
Yeah, it's kind of a frightening notion. The inability to deal with the unwillingness, the whatever to deal with anything outside of that, mm-hmm, and how it's just written off. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's just written off. Someone says something that is certainly a possibility, but it's not in our program. Mm-hmm. And so it's just written off as kind of silly or childish or not well thought out or just unrealistic. It's just...
Yes, yes.
Just not possible.
Yeah, and it seems in that context that unrealistic becomes bad or not... practical or...
Yes.
Yeah.
Really, thoughty, intelligent people just don't waste their time entertaining those kinds of notions, mm-hmm, because mm-hmm, this is the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What comes up for me around that is this idea of world peace. And, it seems impossible.
Yes.
So why even take a step in that direction?
That's right. And rather than, this is really important... If we don't get there soon, there's not going to be anybody to worry about it. But the way we've always done it is this. The way we've maintained peace.
Quote, peace.
Yeah. The way we've maintained peace is through war, through violence, through oppression, through fear. And even though it doesn't work, I think that... what you're saying is a perfect example of what I suspect this fellow is going to be talking about. Mm-hmm. It's never worked. It has never worked. We've never had peace. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it doesn't work doesn't mean it's not reality. Mm-hmm. And so we just keep going down the same track, doing what doesn't work, mm-hmm, because... well, that's just how it is. And if it doesn't work, it's because it doesn't work. And, of course, then we get into pointing the finger because whose fault is it that it doesn't work? Rather than, okay, let's try something different. let's pursue peace and let's focus on that. not focus on the violence that's going to contain other people's violence, but let's find out what peace really is legitimately by itself on its own. Mm-hmm. Let's pursue. Well, it's just silly. That's pie in the sky. It's immature. It's unrealistic. It doesn't work that way. You just don't understand. That's a sweet notion, but you get, kind of get patted on the head and just silly. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I'm going to finish a few pieces of the introduction here.
All right.
And that is...
And I'll just interrupt you
as soon
at
as
will.
You get an, exactly. Exactly. When I've gone on too long, you just kind of...
Oh, no, a thought will just go through my mind.
If you want to email us about that topic or any other topic, you can reach us at openair@kzsu.org. And also, we'd love to hear from all of our listeners, just to know who's out there, what you think, if you want to tell us what you think, and if you're willing to be contacted.
Yeah, we'd like to know where they are.
Yes.
Right? Just it's like with the Assisi Peace Center. You know, all we want is a name and a country.
Uh-huh.
We don't want your street address.
Your email address would be great.
That would be great. And as you say, to let us know if they're be willing to be contacted by us or interested in being contacted by us when we have some big news bulletin.
Yes. But
even if not, you know, no, I don't want to be on another mailing list. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. But we'd still like to know who you are and where you are, where you listen from.
Yes, yes. So that email address is openair@kzsu.org. Archives of all of our shows are available at Sherry's website, which is sherryhuber.com. That's spelled C-H-E-R-I-H-U-B-E-R.com. Sherry, we're going to be talking about sex today.
Excellent.
Excellent. Last week we talked about money.
Mm-hmm.
This week we talked about sex. I don't know what we're going to talk about next week. The fallout of sex and money.
Yeah. What happened?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you've been doing some work.
I've been doing a little bit of work. Yes.
Because you have a workbook.
I have a workbook.
It's actually a guided journal, I understand, because Americans don't like the idea of work. You see, in the publishing business, we learn, don't say workbook.
Don't
because
say workbook.
People are tired of working.
Yeah, workbook is like third grade, right?
Yeah.
Filling out this.
Yeah. And it's work. So you want to have, you know, like you have a playbook or you have a, I think in this case, a guided journal.
A two-part guided journal that I've been working through called Sex and Money Are Dirty, Aren't They? This is by Sherry Huber. You start from one end, you explore your views on sexuality, and if you start from the other end, you look at money. It's a lot of fun and illuminating and a little bit scary sometimes and often enlightening and liberating.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
It's one of those things like a living will where, you know, it'd be really great to participate with all of your loved ones.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it's ever going to catch on, but
can you say more about that?
Well, I was listening to somebody talk about living wills, and they said, you know, this is not going to work for you if you don't have a conversation with your loved ones. So you have to tell people what you want, how you want it to be. Mm. So, you know, I'm in some sort of an accident, and what do people do? Do they keep me alive? Do they pull the plug? Do they, you know, if I could come back, but I'll have 10% of my mental functions, do I want to come back? Would I like to come back with that? Or so you've got to have this conversation. And most people won't have the conversation. Most people die without anything being taken care of because having the conversation is too upsetting.
Mm-hmm.
So same with money. You know, if you could get with all your loved ones and have these conversations, you know, well, what happens with you about that? And what about this? And, well, how much money exactly do you have? And what are you doing with it? And why, you know, and then the same way with sex, you know, to just have these conversations. Because we get into these terrible places about a particular subject because we don't talk about it because there's no information about it because there's just a lot of bad energy about it. You know, people, it's absolutely at the front of everybody's awareness all the time, and everybody's pretending like it's not, and feeling conflicted and kind of yes. bad and guilty and anxious and insecure and like, you know, I'm the only one with problems here. And
yes.
so, no, I don't think really talking about it is going to catch on, but I think it would be a wonderful idea if it did.
Yes. As you were talking about the living will, it reminded me of a book titled, I think I came across, Making a Will Won't Kill You.
Yeah, but you know.
But that's what it feels like.
That's what it feels like. That's exactly why. You know, I don't want to die. I'm not going to make a will. As if not making a will is going to keep me alive. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So over Christmas last year, my grandson, who's 19, and I went up and visited his mother, who recently moved to Washington State.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I can't even remember what was going on, what spawned this conversation, but suddenly he's talking about sex.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, he's very open, not in a, you know, let me shock you about this, but if if something catches his attention and he wants to talk about it, he talks about things very, very honestly.
Yes.
And so he was talking about himself and his body and how his body reacts to this and that and mm-hmm. what happens. And as a result of that, at one point I looked over at his mother you know, she looked like she hadn't breathed in at least 10 minutes. And afterwards, you know, he was off doing something else, and she said, I never in my wildest imagination thought I would be involved in that kind of conversation with my son. And I thought, I mean, first of all, I said, yeah, you know, because I'd never had that kind of conversation in the family.
Yes.
But it was so great. It was just, it was so liberating. So, so normal.
Yeah.
You know,
it wasn't taboo.
No.
It was just and
he was really leading the way. He made it all so casual and so of course that you know, you had to take it that way. Cuz I think if we asked him, I project that he would say, "Well, you know, that's how it is."
Hmm.
It's like, you know,
if you asked him
That conversation, his take on it would be, well, that's, you know, that's how it is. Why wouldn't you talk about it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why would you not want to have that conversation when everybody knows that's how it is?
Mm-hmm.
And we do. I mean, mm-hmm. we all know how it is, mm-hmm. and yet we don't talk about it.
Yeah. So that's my burning question. Why don't we talk about it? What is it about that
I
makes
think
it?
I truly believe that we don't talk about it because we would be liberated.
Hmm. Hmm.
I'm convinced that that's the case. If you consider, now we live in California, we live in the Bay Area of California, and so everybody's in therapy, right? Everybody we know is either a therapist or they're in therapy, or they're a therapist and they're in therapy. Okay. So, we don't have a lot of, you know, ooh about that. In
yes.
fact, I would guess that if anything, people who aren't in therapy would feel kind of bad, you know, like they're not really doing their part, or you know, maybe
yeah.
they're getting left behind, or that
yes.
sort of thing. But in a lot of the world, it's still pretty shameful.
Mm-hmm.
Still set up so that you go in one door, you go out another door, nobody really knows who you're seeing or what you're doing there.
I see.
You know, that kind of
being in therapy is just
you don't want to run it, you know, you don't want your boss to see you coming out of the therapist's office or that sort of thing. Now why?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Mm-hmm.
What if we all said, you know, everybody needs help once in a while. Everybody needs mm-hmm. somebody to talk to who's not invested in
mm-hmm.
them
yes.
personally or trying to fix them or change them.
Yes.
We all have things that we need to look into, but probably don't have the skills to look into.
Mm-hmm.
We're not shamed if somebody sees a plumber coming into the house. You know, we don't say, oh, Thank God he has faulty pipes. So why? Well, because it's about me.
Yeah.
And we grow up being taught to keep everything about ourselves secret. Hmm. So with that, you know, if I were going to create a system of disempowering people, of keeping them anxious and afraid, so that they could be controlled easily, those would be way high up on my agenda. Okay, isolate people, keep them from talking to one another, make them feel bad about themselves, make sure that they don't find out that other people are like they are, because how can you feel bad about yourself if you find out you're normal?
Yes.
So now, where did this get set up, or why did this get set up? Those I do not have answers to.
Yes.
But that it goes in this direction seems clear and obvious. So, 2004, we've really moved a long ways toward having places, avenues, where we can speak honestly. And yet, it's still very, very difficult for people. As you know, we periodically have a sexuality workshop at the retreat center.
Yes.
And we speak pretty openly and frankly about every aspect of sexuality. And a great deal of it is done anonymously.
Yes.
Because still, even in that supportive environment, people are not going to be honest about what's going on if if they have to reveal themselves in it. So people are very eager to reveal what's going on
anonymously.
So we put all these issues out on the table and we all look at them together, but we don't know which one is from George and which one's from Judy and which one's from and you know, one of the places we get to is it doesn't matter.
Yes.
Because we're all in the same relationship with this subject.
Yes.
So what he says, I know that place. What she says, oh, I know that place.
Yes, I can imagine this.
Yeah, it might not be my top three, but hey, I have my own that is the equivalent of that. And so we're making progress.
Yes.
In talking about these things and getting them out and finding out.
Yes.
Kind of, we're all in the same. In the same place with this, we're all struggling with these subjects. But it can feel a little. Well, you know, I think there's another piece of it that's really important too. There's a tremendous belief in this culture, particularly, that feelings lead to behavior, and people are afraid to have feelings because feelings will become uncontrollable. And then people will act out in ways that they shouldn't.
Yes.
So if all of this gets repressed, if it all gets depressed enough, we pretend that it's not there, then, you know, maybe we'll be all right. Maybe we won't have to face this awful, this awfulness. Now, of course, what we know is it doesn't work. And the solution, as far as I can tell, is to make all of this known and then see where we want to go with it. It's like peace. So, I mean, what is one of two of the issues that are just huge in our culture right now and around the world, apparently? Pornography and using children for sex. So, repression doesn't seem to be the answer. Yeah, because all it does, like drugs and so many other things, is turn it into a billion, kajillion, kajillion dollar a year business.
Yes.
And when there's that much money involved, there are going to be plenty of people who are going to do whatever to make that money.
Yes.
So if we really wanted to resolve these issues, it seems to me that as a culture, we would be looking at what goes on with us. How does this happen with us? And how do we find a balance between what goes on with us internally and how we want our lives to be? So I might feel a murderous rage at somebody, mm-hmm. but I don't want our society to be one where people just kill people when they get upset with them.
Yes.
So I need then to learn how not to turn that emotion into the conditioned behavior that mm-hmm. goes with it. Mm-hmm. If we were to focus on that, there are great minds available to us, people who could come up with all kinds of things for us to try mm-hmm. that would move us out of this place where we're stuck. But instead, what we get is a culture that supposedly has a value, one value, operates in a completely different way. Mm-hmm. It costs a ton of money, keeps a ton of people employed mm-hmm. because they're the people fighting the issue, say it's pornography, uh-huh. and then you have all these people deciding what pornography. Well, first of all, you have all the people creating the pornography.
Yes.
You have all the people trying to purchase it. So you have the middle people trying to get the pornography to the people who want it.
Yes.
Okay. Then you have the people fighting it. Then you have the people deciding, is it or isn't it?
Yes.
Then you have all the lawyers trying to determine, should this be against, shouldn't this be? That, I mean, it's just on and on and on. And we lose sight of, why are we having this discussion?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why are we embroiled in this?
Mm-hmm.
Do we, if it's not a value for us, then let's throw the whole thing out the window.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just admit that this is who we are and this is what we want.
Uh-huh.
If that's just not the case, then let's address the issue.
I see. So we could admit that we want pornography?
We want pornography. So, uh-huh. okay, we want pornography. Then how do we want that?
Mm-hmm.
Where do we want it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Instead of, no, we don't want pornography, but of course we do. So then we, you know, then we're going in all of these avenues, which is, to bring it back to awareness practice, it's not at all unlike what goes on with us internally.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, I'm this kind of person. Do I have agreement inside about that?
Mm-hmm.
No.
I'm an honest person.
I'm an honest person. But inside, I have somebody who's always trying to sneak a deal.
Slip and slide.
This yes. person who, you know, wants this and hides out here and mm-hmm. Lies about that. And
mm-hmm.
But that's not who I am. I'm an honest person.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, what's all that stuff?
Right.
Who are all those people then?
Yeah.
And what is my relationship with those people? Well, I'm trying to repress them. I'm trying to deny them. I'm trying to feel bad enough about myself that they'll cease to exist.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really want them to cease to exist because without them, would I ever get any of the things that I want? Mm-hmm. If I were just really an honest person, what would happen to me?
Mm-hmm.
So these people are actually taking care of me, but I hate them because it's not who I am. It doesn't fit with my self-image.
Sounds really messy.
Yeah, but doesn't it sound kind of like real life?
Yes.
Yeah, and so then we just take that internal process and project it out on a large scale, and we have society.
Yeah, and I liked your comment about feelings leading to behavior
mm-hmm.
and that belief. And so it's as if, you know, if I'm attracted to someone, it's like, you know, I'm afraid that I'm going to act on that behavior.
Oh, you can't let yourself know that.
So I can't feel that.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Or then you have the part of you. Okay, so this is the honorable mm-hmm. Michael, right? So there's some reason why. Either that person is unavailable or you're unavailable or mm-hmm. something in the world of honorable.
Mm-hmm.
It's not appropriate for you to act mm-hmm. on that attraction. And that's another whole thing. Right?
Hmm.
So you are a white male in the 35 to 45
mm-hmm.
age group.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what is available for you to be attracted to
mm-hmm.
is a woman
mm-hmm.
in the 30 to 40
yep.
age group. Not taller than you.
Yes.
Not a whole lot shorter than you.
Yes.
Essentially the same color as you.
Yes.
From basically the same family background as
yes.
you. With shared interests.
Yes.
And what does that have to do with attraction?
Hmm.
You know, that's a business contract.
So,
but you've been taught that that's the
yes.
case. So
yes.
Now, God forbid that you find yourself attracted to something someone, we hope it's a someone, let's leave it in someone, who doesn't...
Outside of that category.
Outside of that.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you do with that? Mm-hmm. Well, depends on who you are. You
repress it.
Yeah, you either repress it, or you start slipping and sliding around. You mm-hmm. start sneaking around, and depending on your life circumstances, you might get caught. You might be on the front page of a paper somewhere. You mm-hmm. might lose your job. You might, mm-hmm. you know, all of these kinds of repercussions. Mm-hmm. But say, you know, this is the right height, right size, right mm-hmm. Look, right mm-hmm. education, right person. But they're just not available for some reason mm-hmm. in the world of honor. Now, again, you have two choices. You can either repress the feelings that you're having, or you can start slipping and sliding around, mm-hmm. okay, mm-hmm. which is very, very popular. Mm-hmm. Choice two.
Slipping and sliding.
Extremely popular as far as I can tell.
So what does slipping and sliding look like in this example?
Well, in this example, the honorable thing is to just walk on, right? But mm-hmm. you don't want to because you're attracted. And you don't want to repress those feelings because you're enjoying them. Mm-hmm. So you start figuring out how to get a little something going on because mm-hmm. maybe she's interested too. And mm-hmm. so then pretty soon mm-hmm. the two of you are having an affair. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yes.
But you're still an honorable person. Don't we have all kinds of ways of rationalizing that? You know, I mean, I just couldn't resist. You know, this person
yes.
was just too wonderful. This may have been the love of my life. So maybe, you know, you throw over. Both of you throw over what you – and then – you know, we know the story mm-hmm. over and over mm-hmm. and over and over. Mm-hmm. So what if instead, I think this is where we are in this, what if it were okay for you to feel the feelings that you have? It doesn't mean you have to do anything mm-hmm. or not do anything. Mm-hmm. You can be clear that the feelings that you have are yours. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to repress them. You can enjoy them. And you have decided that you don't want to act on them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you can't not act on them, and that's your choice, then you go see somebody.
that's let me guess. The therapist.
or the Zen master who's going to help you
yes.
work through what's going on with you.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you know, we begin to discover all kinds of things. Well, mm-hmm. you know, I don't really have a model for successful relationships, so mm-hmm. I tend to sabotage them. I mm-hmm. mess them up after this point or mm-hmm. Whatever it is that's going on with you.
Mm-hmm.
If it's okay, if all of this is okay, then, in the front of When You're Falling Dive,
yes.
I lay out this little...
One of your books.
Yes, I lay out this little peace plan for the Middle East, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
And I felt so motivated to send it to the appropriate people because
uh-huh.
just today, the scene that I lay down in the book was acted out.
Hmm.
So there's going to be a meeting for peace, and then there is a suicide bombing. And this group decides that this group is out of control and withdraws the
yes.
offer and blah, blah, blah. In the book, what I say is, okay, the two sides want peace. Both sides acknowledge that they do not have control over everyone in the world.
Yes.
Okay? Now, we can take this inside as well, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So here I have my little... Middle East, and this side and this side and there and all everybody's lined up and I do not have control over these people.
Yes.
So what we do in that case is say, all right, you don't have control over what's going on with you and I don't have control over what's going on with me. You don't have control over your people. I don't have control over my people.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this problem. And this problem is we're trying to make peace, and there are people in our countries who do not want to have peace.
Yes.
And so the fact that they don't want to have peace is the reason we need to be in conversation.
Yes.
If everybody in our two countries wanted peace, then we'd already be at peace, and we wouldn't need to be meeting like this. We'd be off doing something else with our afternoon.
Yes.
So the fact that somebody acts out becomes a problem that we solve together.
Yes.
So now it's my people acting out. Now it's your people acting out. How do we go ahead with our peace process, even though these people are doing this?
Yes.
So to me, that's the same model that we're using with all of this. I want to sexually be an honorable person, or maybe I don't. Maybe I want to be, maybe my goal is as many sexual conquests as I can achieve in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. The content is very different. One is on one end of the continuum, one is on the other. Although you could be honorable about that. Mm-hmm. So say my definition of honorable is in a committed relationship and, mm-hmm. you know, blah, blah, blah. And over here, this person's goal is this. Well, if those are two different people, then there's not a problem. But if they both reside in the same body, then the person has a real difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if we're not afraid of our feelings, then all of those different aspects can come up. They can act out. You know,
yes.
They can do what they do, say what they say, feel what they see, feel. And it's my job to contain all of that
mm-hmm.
from a place of conscious, compassionate awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be afraid and try to repress and hide out. And then this mm-hmm. one starts mm-hmm. slipping and sliding over here. And mm-hmm. then, you know.
Yes.
So whether it's on a worldview, it's inside myself, whether the subject is peace or sexuality
yes.
or money, it
yes.
seems to me we're up against the same difficulty and the resolution is the same process.
Mm-hmm.
We need to bring conscious, compassionate awareness to whatever is going on. We need to accept it fully as it is,
mm-hmm.
for what it is,
mm-hmm.
and from a centered place, make a conscious, compassionate choice about how to proceed.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Doesn't that seem so?
Sign me up. Yes.
Yeah.
You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. My name is Michael Gray. I'm the host of the show. We've been talking about sex. Fascinating conversation. We're not taking your calls today, but we'll be back on the air next week, Tuesday, March 30th. We'd love to hear from you.
And we do want to take their calls then.
We keep
hearing from people the assumption that the lines are just clogged and there's no way that they're going to get through. And that's not true. We're happy to let somebody know that we need to make this quick because there are 15 people lined up. And,
oh, yeah.
And our commitment is to get through all of the calls during whatever show.
Oh, yes.
So just to encourage people to join in. Because, again, our image of this, our vision for this show is a way for all of us to stay connected, to stay in contact.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the Zen Center, the monastery. We have people out there who listen to this show because of the books, who've never,
yes.
I've never met them, you've never met them, they've
yes.
never come to the monastery, they've not, no retreats, no workshops,
yes.
But they like the practice, and so they listen in. And so for all of us to have an opportunity to talk together, to
yes.
To share this awareness practice that we're all doing. Even if it's somebody, periodically we get a call from somebody who was just driving around and tuning their station and
yes.
heard us, and
yes.
they call us from their cell phone, and they don't
yes.
have any idea what Zen practice is, but that's okay. They want to get in the conversation.
Yes.
And that's what we're hoping this will be, is a way for a group of people who share an interest in this topic to stay in touch with one another.
Yes.
And the only way we can do, I mean, we can go so far.
Yes.
Yeah, we can tell that I have an endless ability to just talk on, but to bring other people into the conversation as well. Sometimes you have a hard time getting in the conversation, but to bring as many people as we can and have that feeling of community, of
yes.
of support and sharing. Person doesn't have to have a big problem.
Yeah, if your life's going well, we still want to hear from you.
That's right. And if
tell us how it works.
Yeah, because we'd like to do that.
Yes.
We'd like to have life work. And yeah, I mean, what are you looking at? What are you working on in your practice now? What's up for you in your awareness? And sure,
mm-hmm.
just join the conversation.
Yes. And along those lines, we'd love to hear from people by email.
Yes.
All of our listeners, just to let us know who you are, where you're listening from. And if you'd be willing to receive an occasional email update from us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the conversation begins again on March 30th.
March 30th. And you can email us with that at openair@kzsu.org. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. We've been talking today about sexuality, a weighty topic. Last week was money. This week it's sexuality. And I'd like to start off with a quote. The important thing in acting is to be able to laugh and cry. If I have to cry, I think about my sex life. If I have to laugh, I think about my sex life.
Who said that?
That's by Glenda Jackson. Yes. All these different emotions come up around sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
From, it seems like, complete ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, she probably could have put in just darn near any emotion that we can think of. And
yes,
there's a part of her sex life that would have inspired that or evoked that.
If I have to feel guilty, I'll think about my sex life.
Yeah. Bored, I'll think about my sex life.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. What is it about sexuality that brings up that whole range of...
It's such an interesting one from a spiritual perspective, because now I don't actually know this as a fact, and I try not to say things to people that I don't know from my own experience, mm-hmm. because I do a practice of not believing, so it's important. But this is something that my teacher would talk about periodically, and that is that the first chakra is the only chakra that opens automatically.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the first chakra is basically the sexual organs.
Mm. Can you say what chakras are for people who may not be familiar
with? Yeah, chakras are energy centers in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one, which is down in the genitals, basically, at the tip of the spine, the first chakra, shall we do colors?
Sure.
The color that's associated with that is red.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the survival. It's really the survival of the species, kind of. It's the male, the female, the make babies, make sure the human species survives.
Yes.
And then the second chakra, which is kind of below the navel area, the color of that is orange, and that's the emotional center.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times when people are upset about something emotionally, that's where they feel it. You know, their stomach, which is, it's not really, but that's what people often call it. So that lower abdomen will become distended. It'll become upset. You know, maybe they have physical symptoms that go with it. They get constipated. They get diarrhea. They get all of this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The third chakra is at the solar plexus, and the color that's associated with that is yellow, and that's the will center.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes people will feel anxiety there,
mm-hmm.
And also it's kind of where if you're going to gut something out, you're going to make yourself, you can feel that part of it right around the solar plexus just tighten up, kind of go into a knot, a knot of will.
Yes.
The fourth chakra is green, and it's in the heart area, the chest. It's the heart. It's acceptance. It's acceptance. It's it's much more acceptance than love.
I see.
Yeah. So for the heart, it just is. What is is.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It's not the. It doesn't have that. It love in the sense of compassion, yes, but not in the sense of kind of hearts and flowers and that sort of thing. It's much. It's very pragmatic. The heart center is actually very pragmatic.
Yes.
It's just that's what it is. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
The fifth chakra is in the throat. The color for that is blue, and that's our personal identity. So that's who I am as a person. A lot of times when people are going through changes with maybe a divorce, or it's time to leave a career, or a parent dies or something like that, they'll feel it in their throat. They'll get something. Sometimes people will say, it will notice that they're just going along and they lose their voice. This is definitely a fifth chakra experience. Okay, so it is our expression, but even more than that, it's is who I am as an identity, as a personality. The sixth chakra is in the forehead, and the color for that is a purple or a dark lavender, and that's the knowing. The conditioned mind lives there. The sixth chakra is the experience of it is walking into a place and immediately assessing it. Looking at a person and assessing them. You know, I like that. I would like the way that person looks. Why are they wearing that? Who bought that couch? This sort of how people should be, how it is, that kind of knowing and understanding goes there. The seventh chakra, which is just above the crown of the head, the color that's associated with that is white. And that's a knowing that is transcendent. So it's the wisdom center, and a lot of times, have you ever had the experience of knowing something that you know you don't know? In other words, you have a clarity about something, but you've never learned that. You don't know where it comes from. It's almost a, it's kind of, visions come from there. It's a connected to a greater intelligence than this little one that we've been programmed.
An understanding that has not come from any experience that I can point to.
So those are the the chakras. Now, why are we talking about them?
Sexuality.
Yes.
The first chakra.
Opens automatically.
Opens automatically.
The rest of them are in whatever condition they're in when we tune into them. And people, if they want their chakras to open, usually have to do a lot of introspective awareness work, that kind of thing. And as they go along, their chakras become more open. And a lot of the experiences of spirituality are a product of various chakras opening in different ways. So, you know, many people know the experience of their heart opening. People know the experience of their sixth chakra opening, just being open to things that they weren't open to before, going beyond that, but this is the right way, kind of sixth chakra experience. So the first chakra opens automatically, and it opens at puberty. Now, so the first chakra is actually self-awareness. Yes, or self-consciousness. Now, remember being a teenager?
Yes.
And that horrible, paralyzing embarrassment of self-consciousness? Okay. Now, one of the things that my teacher would talk about is that that is a sad, unfortunate, unnecessary occurrence. Because if children, if we lived in a world in which children understood that that's their first chakra opening, so that's their, this huge expansion of awareness that is happening with them, and that it's a wonderful thing, a thing to be enjoyed and explored and this sort of thing. But we don't have that. And the feelings, because of the location of the first chakra, are sexual. So the sexuality gets awakened at the same time. Sadly, in our culture, that is seen as a negative, even in the most enlightened homes, usually.
This awakening sexuality.
So now, suddenly, this child is in the process of being awakened sexually. That's a bad thing. That's an embarrassing, negative thing, because nobody's talking about it. Nobody's talking about what's happening with your body and this sort of thing. You know, you're getting information from people who have as little information as you have, and
your peers,
and you're trying to, you know, get books to look at and get a clue and a hint about, or you're talking to older kids and they're messing with your head because you know they went through it and they want you to suffer through it too, because that's how we like to be. So that all gets lumped together, and that awakening of awareness and self-awareness and self-consciousness gets seen as a negative thing that needs to be repressed. So most people, when they move through a stage of development, once they survive it, never want to revisit it. So who
Because it's not a pleasant experience.
Was any of that pleasant? I mean, who really wants to go back there and engage again with all of those mm-hmm. agonies of mm-hmm. adolescence, of puberty.
Mm-hmm.
So we just put it behind us. It's embarrassing. It's, you know, it was a humiliating time. It was, oof.
Mm-hmm.
And then we move on to wherever we are, and whatever difficulties. I don't want to put too much of a spin on it because
yes.
I don't know what people's experience is, but
yes.
Whatever that difficulty is just gets kind of built in. So, you know, here you are as an adult and you're in a sexual situation, and how many of us, how often can find, you know, lurking right there, that adolescent, insecure, anxious.
Uh-huh.
So how much conscious awareness do we really want to bring to this? How vulnerable do we actually want to be in this situation?
Yes.
We're already so vulnerable. You know, one look, one word is going to be just devastating. How many people just tune it out? You know,
uh-huh.
just kind of go unconscious and do what they need to do. And then maybe come to at some point later on, maybe not. But
mm-hmm.
it takes a great deal of courage to walk into these situations with our eyes open.
Yes, yes. And I was thinking, too, it's fascinating the way you described that awareness opening, first opening in our body during puberty, and that gets overlaid with the sexuality.
Yes.
So they can't be seen separately.
Yes, yes.
It can't be seen as just, wow, there's a big awareness. I'm much more aware of it. Everything.
Oh, yeah. And what we remember is that feeling of, you know, just sticking your finger in a 220 outlet.
Mm.
You know, the adrenaline is rushing around and the hormones are,
mm-hmm.
you know, they just got turned loose in a body. They're, you know, they're looking for levels and, you know, this sort of thing. And there's very little help for kids with getting through that.
Mm-hmm.
For most kids, the relationship with adults by that point is not one where they want to make themselves vulnerable.
Mm.
And
Adults don't want to make themselves.
The kids don't want to make themselves
uh-huh.
vulnerable. And in a lot of cases, the parents are just living in a world of terror of what this means, you know, because it's so interesting, because of all the taboos. You know, so many parents are just focused on their children not being sexual, especially if their children are girls.
Uh-huh.
So there we hit the big, for many, many people, the big parting of the ways where boys are encouraged to be sexual.
Uh-huh.
Not in a, you know, not in any kind of a heart-opening sort of a way.
Right.
Yeah, but just in a, okay, you're a man, go out there and get as many women as you can.
Yes.
And while your sister, you know, all
yes.
we care about is that she remain a virgin for the rest of her life if we
yeah.
if we can achieve that, but it's certainly at least until she marries.
Yes.
And I think those old you know, that still lingers, even though
oh, yeah.
in many ways we think we've moved beyond it.
Mm-hmm.
If you consider, now I actually never saw this show, but I've read about it a lot,
mm-hmm.
the Sex and the City.
Sex and the City, yeah.
Sex and the City, is
yes.
that what it is?
Yes.
It should be Sex in the City, huh?
Yes.
Because that's more people's fascination with that show,
mm-hmm.
to me, tells us how far we have not come.
Yes.
With this issue,
mm-hmm.
that we're bringing not that much more conscious awareness to it than we were
mm-hmm.
50 years
mm-hmm.
ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Fascinating. I have a quote here by Mae West.
Uh-huh.
It is better to be looked over than overlooked.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
And I don't, go ahead.
It's like we have to be attractive
uh-huh.
to everyone all the time.
Yes.
Otherwise, there's something wrong with me.
Yes. Yeah. And I don't really know about this for men, not having been a male in this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
But for women, of course, that's a, you know, that's a huge thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because still in this culture, and this culture, well, we are certainly not the front runners in equality, but we're way ahead of much of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And still, a woman is primarily seen
mm-hmm.
as a broodmare,
mm-hmm.
As an object for reproduction.
Mm-hmm.
And when she's attractive, then that's how she's attractive. That's what she has to offer. whatever degree of attractiveness it is. That's mm-hmm. that's what's being traded all mm-hmm. the time. Mm-hmm. And so that's a that's a very sad mm-hmm. statement, especially somebody like Mae West. For those who can remember Mae West, that's exactly how she lived her life. Who would she have been if she didn't portray herself as that buxom, sexually charged,
desirable
woman? Mm-hmm. You know, she'd have been washing dishes and raising kids somewhere. Uh-huh. So, you know, each of the genders, both of the genders, sell kind of what they have to sell.
Yes.
So as not to be overlooked.
Uh-huh. Physically.
Yeah.
Sexually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
So for men, much more power, money, you know, that's what they have to offer. Women have their physical attractiveness.
Yes. Yes. And it seems they can be traded off.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm. I hope we're just igniting desires for conversation all over the world.
Yes, for next Tuesday,
yes.
March 30th.
Yes, because, you know, if people want to talk about the middle mind, that's great. We can talk about it the week after or the week after that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have to be in a hurry. If people, after money and sex, just need to get on the line here and
get and, on the phone and
that's right,
let
bring
it
some
out.
Conscious, compassionate awareness to these subjects, we would be open to that.
Yes, yes. Can you mention again the book?
Yeah, The Middle Mind, Why Americans Don't Think for Themselves, by Curtis White.
By Curtis White.
Yeah, Curtis White is a... he's a English professor at Illinois State University, mm-hmm. and he wrote, his two novels are Memories of My Father Watching TV and Requiem. I think I'll be a candidate for that, Memories of My Father Watching TV.
And is this our homework for our next week?
Yes, I would like that to, I mean, unless, again, people want to bring some conscious, compassionate awareness to either sex or money or both.
Yeah.
And we want to look at that on the 30th when we are here answering the phones.
That would be great. Or any other topic.
Any other topic. We're, as people can probably tell, we're open to talking about anything.
Yes.
Because, you know, it all comes down to the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're either living in a conditioned reality of suffering, mm-hmm. or we're here in this moment, present, bringing conscious, compassionate awareness to whatever subject.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. it all works.
Great. Great. Well, I've really enjoyed this hour. It's been great.
Is it over already?
We are, yes.
My goodness.
Time
well,
flies.
As they say, yes. You got there before I did. All right. So I will be talking to you on the 30th.
On the 30th. Stay tuned to KZSU. Coming up at 6 p.m., we have DJ Decca with her great world music. The show is called At the Cafe Bohemian. And after that, from 8 to 10 p.m., we have Pat Blue Ribbon and Eric Kay. So stay tuned. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. I'd like to thank all of our listeners today for joining us. If you want to email us before the 30th, you can reach us at openair@kzsu.org. And we'd like to hear from all of our listeners, just to let us know that you're out there and where you're listening from, and if you'd like to receive an occasional email from us about what we're up to. Also, archives of all the shows are available on Sherry's website, and that's sherryhuber.com, spelled CHERIHUBER.com. Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks, Michael.
Good night.